Okay. Sandy Magnus, this is Al Rochelle in Tampa. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Al. I'm doing fine.
And I will be on the ground rooting you on because I was fortunate enough to cover STS-1, so this is kind of bittersweet for all of us.
Oh, wow. So you span the whole history. That's great.
Yeah, and you're from Belleville, Illinois, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I was in the St. Louis market from 1982 to 86, so
close
enough. All right, let's start out. Do you feel like there's any extra pressure on you because this is the last flight of the shuttle program?
No, and actually for any shuttle mission, no matter where in the sequence you've flown, you have the same amount of pressure, and you want to perform the mission well and get it done successfully and then get back.
So now you originally trained, I guess this was going to be a possible rescue mission, which we've never had to use, thank God, which would have been STS-335. So did you have to do double the training, or how does that work?
Well, actually, what you train for a rescue mission is sort of a subset of what you train for a nominal mission. So we've been able to be very efficient, and we started out concentrating on some of the things that you would do as a rescue mission, which is a lot of the ascent and entry, and then slowly added some of the, you know, filled out the rest of the mission. So the training has actually been pretty efficient from that viewpoint.
Now, because we've never used that rescue technique, how fast could they have gotten the shuttle on the pad if they had to do a rescue?
Well, they have a certain requirement, you know, I think it's 60 or 90 days, and a lot of it has to do, too, with what the state of the station consumables are at the time that the crew launches, you know, how much carbon dioxide removal capability we have, the food, the water, the oxygen. So that drives a little bit of when the shuttle's required, too, and that changes on a case-by-case basis.
So I've got to ask, are you going to do anything special up there to kind of commemorate the last shuttle flight?
Well, we have some ideas, but we're not giving anything away ahead of time.
Oh, come on now.
No, I'm not going to do it. You have to talk to Chris, but I don't think he's talking.
Are you going to be able to write on the walls like Sandy was here?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. We have already got a tradition where every shuttle that comes to the station leaves their crew patch up there, so I'm sure we'll be doing that too.
Now, when those are put on display, will some of that memorabilia stay on board too, just for its historic nature?
Some the crew patches are up there. I'm not sure, but I think they may have brought one panel back. And of course, there's pictures of this all over the place on the NASA archives and things like that. There's many pictures. So you put your crew patch up, and then you take a picture of the panel. And then also the spacewalkers, those who do spacewalks out of the station airlock, also put their crew patch in the airlock. So.
Wow. You know, the shuttle program has given women astronauts really kind of an unprecedented platform to display their incredible skills. We're talking Sally Ride back in 1983. You, our own Nicole Stott from the Clearwater area. Are you guys and gals going to have the same kind of access to deep space missions in the future? And I know the astronaut corps will be greatly reduced in size. So what's that look like for women in the future?
Well, I don't think you'll see any changes. You know, the first female astronauts were selected in 1978, and since then we've been an integral part of the office. And I think one nice thing about the shuttle program is not just that women got an opportunity to fly, but people from a broader variety of backgrounds, you know, engineers, scientists, internationals even. So the shuttle made it possible for us to expand the types of people flying in space in general.
Yeah, now, does it become a little bit more difficult because, I mean, there is some nostalgia going into this flight to really stay focused. I remember at the 30th anniversary, the head of NASA kept saying, now, stay focused here, folks, stay focused.
Yeah, I think we're not really having much of a problem staying focused on the mission from the viewpoint of, you know, we've got a lot to do, this is our job, we've got to get all of the knowledge and skills developed that we need so we can focus on the job. I think while we're on board, some of that will start to hit us. You know, as we finish some of these milestones, as we finish the spacewalk, as we install the MPLM, as we get most of our transfer done, as we finish the undock and separation and we're heading home, you know, it's going to come, I think incrementally we'll become more and more aware that this is, oh my gosh, this is the last time and feel that a little bit more. Now we're very just in the, we've got to get everything ready to go and get this mission done kind of mode.
Now, I know that robotics are going to play an important role, have and will in the future, in terms of trying to refuel. Are they talking about refueling satellites or just refueling the space station or what?
Actually, we're taking up a payload, a science experiment for the special purpose dexterous manipulator, which is a little bit more of a dexterous robot that's on station, and it's going to experiment with just those kinds of tasks. You know, if we send a robot to refuel a satellite so it doesn't have to crash back into the atmosphere and you know, basically end its useful life, and could we refuel automatically fuel tanks on orbit for long duration ships and things like this. So we're starting those kinds of technological experiments and those kind of technological developments. Not so much, we already refueled the space station via the Progress vehicle or the or with oxygen and nitrogen via the shuttle when we're there. So we've already got ways that we put different kinds of fuels and gases on board the space station. So this is more for getting out of low Earth orbit kinds of activities.
Now, the advantage of the shuttle was, I mean, it was basically called the 18-wheeler of space because you could get a lot of materials and you could get large experiments. If we didn't have this, you know, the Hubble would have been a lot more difficult to deal with. So what do we have now in our arsenal to get heavier materials up into space? Do we have anything yet?
Well, actually, that's going to be a little bit of a gap in our capability for a while because the shuttle was unique not just in what it could get to space, but even more so in what it could bring back from space. It, for example, we're bringing the pump module down on our mission. It's, if you recall, it's the pump module broke last summer unexpectedly, short of its expected lifetime, and by being able to bring that back on the shuttle, we can study and understand what went wrong and of course improve our design and engineering techniques. So this kind of capability we will be missing for a while until we build heavy lift launch vehicle and some of the commercial companies morph their capsules into things that are able to return large amounts of payload. But that is something unique to the shuttle, that it's a capability we'll be missing.
Now, you may not know this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So when this shuttle lands and the mission is successful, then what happens to the astronaut corps? I mean, are you still, in quotes, employed, or what happens?
Well, of course, you have to remember, we're still flying people in space. We're just not flying them in space on the shuttle. We have a very vibrant, active, healthy space station program, and we're continuing to send people, not just United States astronauts, but astronauts from all over the world, to the space station to operate and do the science and discovering exploration that we've been doing there for 10 years already and will continue to do. So the space shuttle program is the end of a program. It's not the end of human spaceflight. So
sure,
you have to kind of keep that distinction in mind.
All right, two more questions for you. Your first spaceflight was aboard this shuttle. So does that make it all the more special?
Yeah, actually, it is kind of great that my first flight was on Atlantis, and here I'm able to finish up the program on Atlantis as well. It's sort of like I've come full circle.
And you got to stay, what, 4.5 months in the International Space Station?
Yes, that's exactly right.
So I had one of the astronauts, Andy Allen, that has a company here in the Oldsmar area, because I said, well, so is this like staying in a real fancy RV when you're up in space?
It is, actually. It is kind of like a camping trip. You know, you're taking everything with you that you need, just like you do on a camping trip. If you don't have it with you, then you're sort of out of luck, just like you are on a camping trip. And space station actually is quite luxurious compared to the shuttle, because on the shuttle, we put our sleeping bags away every day, get them out every night, and on space station I had my own little closet of my room that I could sort of create personal space in. So it was a little bit nicer, but it is like a camping trip.
Yeah, and then let's put the Soyuz in that mixture. What's that like?
Soyuz is it's a capsule, so it harkens back to the days here where we had the Apollo, Mercury, and Gemini program, and it's a little more cramped quarters. But remember, you're not really in the Soyuz for very long because they only take about a day and a half to get to the space station. So it's really, no kidding, a taxi kind of a ship. You get in, you fly somewhere, you get out, and you can do anything for a day.
Just don't get up and stretch and try to scratch your head, right?
Well, there's scratch your head room, but not much.
And last, Sandy, what do you think you're going to miss the most about this whole business with the shuttle?
Oh, gosh. It's the people. There's a very special group of people who work in spaceflight. And unfortunately, because of the way the programs are transitioning, we're going to lose a lot of really great people with a lot of really great knowledge and a lot of really great skills. And I think, just seeing them every day and interacting with them and sharing the magic of spaceflight, it's going to be kind of sad to see that part go.
Well, Sandy, good luck to you. And like I say, I'll be rooting you on from the ground, and let's hope everything is successful and we send Atlantis off into history in a wonderful way.
Well, thank you very much. It was good talking with you.
All right. Take care, Sandy. Goodbye.
Bye.
Sandra Magnus, can you hear me? Ron Trevino, KHOU 11 News, can you hear me?
I have you loud and clear, Ron. Good morning.
How you doing?
Doing okay.
Okay, so you must be very excited, but I guess everybody's asking you that question now.
Well, actually, you know, you're very excited, but you're also starting to panic a little bit because there's only a month before the flight, and there's a lot of things to get done yet, and it's like, oh, my gosh, am I going to get everything done? So you start to have those kinds of thoughts, too.
Well, how does it feel to be the last female to go up on a shuttle?
Well, you know, it's funny. People have been asking me that question, but if you ask Fergie, you know, he's the last naval officer, and Rex is the last Air Force officer, and Doug is the last Marine. So I think we're all overwhelmed by the fact that we got named to the last shuttle flight, and we feel very honored to be on it, regardless of what our individual backgrounds are.
But the shuttle program's coming to an end, so I guess that's got to be bittersweet.
Yeah, it is. It's something we want to focus on, you know, as a celebration, is not just the sad part of seeing a wonderful program come to an end, because it does mark the time where NASA feels like it's ready to get out of low Earth orbit and move further and away from the planet with our efforts at exploration, and that's really very exciting. And so that, in combination with the fact that looking what the shuttle program has given the country, looking at the incredible versatility that this vehicle has demonstrated over the years, it really makes you want to be sort of happy and celebratory, as well as a little bit sad, because it's always sad to say goodbye to things, especially such a successful program.
Now, what does this mean for the astronaut corps? What does this mean for you now that the shuttle program is coming to an end?
Well, you have to remember, we have a very vibrant, healthy, and energetic space station program, and we've been flying people on space station for over 10 years now. We've got another 10 years to go, and even though we're not launching them on the space shuttle, we're launching people on the Soyuz rocket and then hopefully later on other efforts that are ongoing in the United States. And so we have plenty of things to do in space right now in low Earth orbit with all of the great science and technology development that we're continuing to do on the space station. So we're gearing up to shift more to our, over the last 10 years into a more long duration focused group as opposed to a short mission focused group.
Would you be slated up to go up in Russia?
Oh, gosh, I don't know what happens with me after this. I'll have to have a talk with Peggy Whitson, the chief of the office. I've done one long-duration mission. Long-duration missions are very special because you actually get to live in space and develop a lifestyle there, as it were. So we'll see.
Did you have any heroes or role models when you decided to become an astronaut?
Well, quite frankly, the two most important role models in my life have been my parents. They have encouraged myself, my sisters, and brother from day one to dream big and go for it, if you will. And I've always encouraged us in our efforts. And you know, parents are examples, and they've always been great examples for us on how to live our lives. And I really can't say enough to thank them for what they've given us.
Very good. Now, can you give us examples of what you have to do to get ready for this flight? I mean, maybe things that people wouldn't even think of, you know, little things that you have to do. Can you like this? Maybe something that we wouldn't even think of that you have to do to get ready for this trip.
Oh, gosh. Well, there's picking out your menu and trying to figure out what kind of food you're going to wear, picking out tennis shoes to run on the treadmill with, picking out and understanding how the cameras work, so that we can take the right kinds of pictures of the Earth or inside, or how all of the photo TV equipment works on the station, understanding how to troubleshoot laptop computers when they go belly up on space. These are the things that you do on a day-to-day basis up there. The ascent, of course, and the entry are just a very small part of the mission. They're very dramatic, but they're very small part of the mission. So there's all these small things that we have to deal with. You have to be pretty detail-oriented because things like to get lost in space, and so you have to keep track of your stuff really closely. And so we do a lot of minutia-type planning to manage that.
Did you just say that things get lost in space?
I did. Well, it's funny, when I was on space station, you know, I'd put a pencil on the wall because, you know, you can't just put something on a table, right? It floats away if you have that. So you have to fasten everything down all the time. and you look away for a minute to read your procedure or go get something else, and your orientation would just shift a little bit, maybe 30 degrees, maybe you'd float one way or the other, and all of a sudden you'd look to where you put your pencil, and of course your pencil's not there because you've changed your orientation and you didn't realize it. So it takes you a minute to look around and go, okay, where am I? Where did I put the pencil? Okay, there it is. And then you can go on. So little things like that can get you in space. Gravity actually helps you here.
Okay. All right, well, don't get lost in space. But tell us, what's your role in this mission?
I am mission specialist number one, so that means that I am sitting on the flight deck assisting Rex with some of keeping track of some of the systems, mainly when some of the big malfunctions occur during ascent and entry. On orbit, I'm the load master, so I'm sort of the logistics person when it comes to how we're going to get things out of the MPLM, our big cargo box we're taking up, and get stuff back into the MPLM. And then with Doug, we're doing all of the robotics with respect to installing the MPLM and uninstalling the MPLM and supporting the spacewalk that'll be going on while we're there.
Do you have any words of encouragement for people at the Johnson Space Center and people in Houston now that this shuttle program is coming to an end? I mean, any kind of words of encouragement to the future? Because, you know, a lot of people are down in this area.
Yeah, you know, it's a rough time, of course, because times of transition are very rough. And I think people should remember what we have and keep in mind and be very proud of what we've accomplished with the space station program. It's been 30 years of incredible success, with a vehicle that has grown into its mission over the years as we've asked it to do many, many things. And none of that would have been possible without the people who have put their heart and their soul into the program, not just here in Houston, of course, but all over the country. And I think it's a very special workforce that we have here in the space industry. The people are very dedicated. They're very enthusiastic. They put a lot of work into it. And I think the success of the shuttle program stands as a testament to the quality of those people. And I think no matter what happens next, that's something that everyone who's worked in the space industry should be proud of and take pride in their part of it.
Do you get any jitters, or is that a rhetorical question? I mean, I guess this never gets old, these launches, huh?
No, they're quite exciting. But I was talking with another report at one point, and it's funny, it's harder to watch it than it is to do it. Because when you're involved in a mission, you're very focused. Your main thoughts are, oh, I've got to learn all this stuff. I have to remember this. I have to remember that. I have to make sure that I understand all of the parameters of how this robot arm operates and things like that. But when you're not involved in the mission and you've got to step back and you're watching your friends do it and launch, then it becomes a little bit more difficult to watch. But when you're in the middle of it, you're just focused on getting your job done.
Okay, and we're running out of time, but you told us about what your role was, but what's the primary aim of this last mission? What's the overall aim? What are you guys going to be doing up there?
The focus of the mission is, of course, logistics. We're sending up a lot of logistics so that we have a lot of margin on the space station. We're sending a lot of science experiments, a lot of spares, a lot of clothing, food, things like that. And then the most important thing that we're doing on the return is we're bringing the pump module back that, if you remember, we had some problems with it last summer and we had to do an EVA to replace it. And by being able to bring that pump module back on the shuttle, we can kind of do a dissection of it and find out why it broke, and that'll help us improve our engineering techniques for the future. So that's a pretty important mission parameter as well.
All right, we're just about out of time. Any point you want to stress?
No, I just I think everybody in Houston should be really proud of what we've accomplished here with the space shuttle program, and we're looking forward to getting beyond low Earth orbit and going further.
All right, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Magnus, this is CNN. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Wonderful. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. Your anchor this morning is going to be Martin Savage.
Okay.
And he will begin the interview momentarily.
Very
Thanks
good.
Thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
This is CNN Audio. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear.
Excellent. Thank you.
How about now? Yes. I do. Sandy.
Yes.
Martin Savage here.
Good morning, Martin.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Nice to see you. July 8th is the scheduled date, correct, for the liftoff of this?
That's correct.
Okay. I was hoping for July 4th. That's just the sentimental part of me.
Yeah.
Just like the best fireworks for the 4th of July.
That would be pretty impressive fireworks.
It would be. Would be. Yep. Well, anyway, we're just finalizing a few things, and we're going to be with you in just a moment.
Very good.
What, just for my own personal edification, you are a mission specialist. That's your title, correct?
That's correct.
And what exactly will be the role of this particular Atlantis mission? I mean, I know it's the last, but what is the role?
Yeah, the prime purpose of the mission is logistics. We're putting a big slug of logistics on orbit to give us some margin as the development of the commercial capability unfurls. We're sending up a lot of science experiments. We're sending up a lot of spare parts. We're sending up, you know, a lot of consumables that we won't need to worry about putting on other vehicles for a while. So we're trying to just get a big slug of logistics up there so that we've got the capability to run the station for a while, depending upon how the commercial capability rolls in, as well as one of the prime things a shuttle can do that no other vehicle can do is bring large things back. So we're bringing back the pump module that broke last summer, which is a very large widget, if you will, to understand why it failed before we expected to. And that kind of post-failure analysis is important to improving our equipment, improving our designs for future endeavors. So those are the two big things that we're doing.
Yeah, so there's real work to be done. All right, we're ready to go, so we can start, right, Rebecca? Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. You're going to have a remarkable seat on history as part of this last shuttle mission. Have you thought about that a lot?
Well, you know, it's funny. We're just like any mission, we're very focused at the moment on understanding our roles, understanding our responsibilities, learning everything we need to learn in order to carry out the mission. During the course of doing this and our training, of course, we've had these last time we're doing this class, the last time we're doing that class. And so it's been hitting us a little bit as we've gone through the preparation, but I think the reality will sink in while we're on orbit and we're finishing each of these major tasks we have to do. And definitely when we land, I think we're going to be sitting on the flight deck looking at each other going, oh, wow, this is it. You know? So, but right now we're very focused on just learning what we need to learn to carry out the mission.
What do you think the legacy will be for the entire space shuttle?
You know, the space shuttle is an incredible vehicle, and as you know, our goals now are, as an organization, are to move out of low Earth orbit. The shuttle is very much a low Earth orbit type of vehicle, and I don't think we'll see anything like it for a very long time. If you look at how versatile it's been over the last three decades and the types of things we've asked it to do, you know, deploy and retrieve satellites, repair satellites, strict science missions, and most importantly, build and construct the space station, it really has carried out a lot of different roles. And it's paved the way, I think, for where we're going to go in the future, and that'll be one of its largest legacies.
And one of the things it's paved the way for is women in space. And I'm wondering there, too, if you could think about the legacy.
Actually, the shuttle provided not just an opportunity for women to fly in space, but scientists and engineers and international astronauts as well. If you look at how the shuttle program has evolved over the years, we've really broadened the type of people that we need, the skill sets we need, and we've been able to, because the shuttle flies so many people at one time, we've been able to bring international partners in, and some of those relationships actually paved the way for what we're doing now on the International Space Station. So the shuttle provided an opportunity for a wider range of people to be able to fly in space, and I think that's probably, when you talk about legacy, that's one of the legacies that we can look at.
And what's next for you, and what's next for Atlantis?
Well, for myself, post-mission, I'm not really sure. I've had one long-duration mission. Perhaps I will have another. It's something that I'll worry about after the mission, actually, since we're so focused on getting our jobs done here. And, of course, Atlantis will be remaining in Florida at the Space Center down there. That's where it was assigned to go in its retirement, and we're actually very excited to be able to take Atlantis back to Florida after the mission, and we're looking forward to that.
Mission Specialist Andy Magnus, good luck to you and to Shuttle Atlantis and the crew. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So,
you are clear. Thank you for your time.
What will you do? I mean, we're done with the interview. I'm just curious. What will astronauts do without the sort of high-profile program that Shuttle has brought?
Well, you have to remember we're not ceasing flying people in space. We've got people continuing to fly to the space station and living on board the space station. And there's a lot of exciting things going on
on the
space station.
Mm-hmm.
So
those are scientists and
it's everybody. We've got pilots, teachers, scientists, engineers. Anybody in the office who's medically qualified can fly to the space station and has and will continue to do so. So it's kind of, and this transition's been taking place for the last 10 years or so. We're shifting from the short duration mission focus that the shuttle drives because of the way it flies to the long duration mission focus that we need to have to do exploration, and station is sort of the first step in that. You know, we're staying 6 months in space, 3 months in space. We're learning a lot about how human beings change in space. We're running experiments so you can get more information and more interesting data out of, because they can stay on orbit for months at a time instead of days at a time. And so I think what you see in the astronaut office over the last decade is this shift from the short duration focus to the long duration focus, and including the science community as we start building our skill sets and our experience base for the exploration missions that are going to be facing us here soon. And as far as high profile, low profile,
thanks for making it clear for me.
Yeah, I mean, you guys should become involved in what's going on with the space station. It's, you know, it's not as dramatic as a shuttle launch, but there are certainly a lot of really great things going on there that I think people would be interested in.
We'll continue to follow. Thank you.
Dr. Magnus, this is John Decker at Reuters Television in Washington. How are you today?
Good morning, John. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to get you early in this process. I know these satellite interviews can take a lot out of people, so hopefully your energy level is really up for our interview, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Happy to be here, and space is always a fun thing to talk about no matter what the time, so it's okay.
Absolutely. Well, you're about a month away. It's June the 6th. The date of the launch is set for July the 8th. Give me a sense about your mood, the mood of the crew right now, heading into this final launch for the shuttle, all of the shuttle missions.
You know, it's funny, after a long training flow, you get a month before flight, and you're excited because, like, oh, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, but you're also slightly panicking. It's like, oh, my gosh, we've only got a month. We've got things to finish up and polish off and make sure we understand. So you're sort of, it's a two-edged sword that you're so close to flight, but we're looking forward to it.
Is there any special feeling that you have, given that this is the not just, it's your third mission on a shuttle flight, but it's the last mission for all of the shuttle flights? Give me the sense of what that means to you.
Yeah, it's something that it's sort of hitting us in small little waves that, no kidding, this is the last one. Because when you're training for a mission, you're very focused on learning everything you need to learn and understanding everything you need to do and making sure you have a good plan to execute the mission. And that keeps your focus very, very narrow. But during our training flow, we've had a lot of less. This is the last time we're going to have this class. This is the last time this person's going to teach this class. This is the last time we're going to go to Florida and do a hardware interface with these people. And so we've had those kinds of little milestones hitting us the whole time to constantly remind us that this is, no kidding, the last shuttle flight. But I think emotionally and just it really is not going to hit us until we're on the landing runway, and we've just landed and we're having to get out of the shuttle the last time. And when we're on orbit and we're slowly getting through some of these milestones that we need to get through for the mission, it'll probably just hit us. So for us, it's been sort of this rising tidal wave of realization as we've gone through these different milestones.
Is there, it's not just you and the crew, there's a number of people at NASA that are impacted by the fact that this is the last shuttle flight. Is there, from what you detect, a sense of sadness that this aspect of NASA is ending?
Well, you know, we've known for 6 years or so that the shuttles were to retire in 2010, so everyone was mentally prepared and I think emotionally prepared at some level to deal with this day when we got here. But it's still sad for people. You know, people are losing their jobs. Working in the space industry for decades, and all of a sudden their job's going away, and that's certainly a tough thing to handle. And transitions are usually very difficult to begin with. So you know, even though you're prepared for it, you're still emotionally kind of sad about it. But one thing that I have to say is the people who've been working on the program that we've been interfacing with have been all terrific. The morale is high. They're determined that Atlantis is going to be the best mission ever. The vehicle is ready to go and pristine because of the dedication of folks in Florida. The people here in Houston are working really hard to make sure that we have everything we need for the mission. The people in Huntsville, Alabama, who do a lot of our science prep, are also working very hard. So it's sort of a mixed, you know, sad and happy all at the same time.
What does it mean to be the last woman flying on a space shuttle mission?
Yeah, we were kind of laughing about that because if you look at it, Fergie's the last naval officer and Rex is the last Air Force officer and Doug is the last Marine. So it's depending upon how you want to look at it, there's all kinds of different lasts running around with respect to this mission. And you know, it's funny because it's not like we're stopping flying people in space. We're continuing to fly people to the space station, women, you know, engineers, scientists, military, civilian. And so it's sort of a strange milestone to look at, if you will.
I've spoken to some astronauts in the program who tell me they're kind of irked at the fact that, you know, in terms of trying to get to the International Space Station in the near future, at least, the United States is going to have to rely on Russia. Have you thought about that? That Russia, this is the country that was involved in the space race back in the 50s and 60s. And now the United States is going to be paying Russia to send the U.S. astronauts up on their vehicles.
Well, certainly we knew back 6 years ago when it was determined that the shuttle was going to be retired and we were looking around for what the next program was going to be, that there was going to be a gap in the capability of the United States to send astronauts to orbit. And we're still in that situation, unfortunately. As far as the International Space Station goes and the international cooperation that we have there, I think that's probably the wave of the future, if you will. And what we need to decide as a country is how we want to be involved in spaceflight in the future and what we want our capabilities to be. And certainly having a way to access space, whether it's low Earth orbit or on an exploration basis, is important to us. And I think, you know, we're slowly working on that.
Give me a sense of what the mood is right now along the Space Coast in terms of what comes next after the retirement of the space shuttle. Is there a feeling of uncertainty, or do you think that things have been made clear from NASA in D.C., from the White House even, as to what is next for NASA as it relates to a manned space exploration?
Well, I can't really speak for the Space Coast, but I will say that there is certainly in the workforce, people that I've chatted with, a little bit of uncertainty about where we're going and how we're going to get there. You know, transition times are very difficult because, you know, everybody wants the answer now. And when you have such a big question in front of you, it's hard to really resolve that. And I think everybody's comfortable with the fact that we're going to be moving out of low Earth orbit, and they understand that. And we're going to be taking the next step and doing exploration. And people are excited about that, but, you know, we're still working out the hows and the whys and the wherefores and the details. And, of course, being in the space industry, we want that answer now so we can get started and we can start working on it because we want to go there. And unfortunately, when you're still working things out at the policy level, the way things are right now, you're not going to get those answers as quickly as you, the engineer, the technician, or the administrator, the administrator wants to. So it's tough for people right now as we hash out some of these bigger questions.
You've done something, Dr. Magnus, that very few Americans have done. This will be your third shuttle flight. You've flown on Atlantis. You've flown on Endeavour. You've flown on Discovery. You're going to be making yet another trip on the shuttle Atlantis. Does this ever get to the point where you're jaded, or are you just so excited to be going back into space?
No, there's no way to get jaded when you're dealing with space flight. It's also magical and it's also special, and we're doing so many exciting things that you can't get jaded. It's not possible.
What do you, I'm sure you talk to regular folks, people that aren't in the NASA program, literally every day, that ask you about what it's like to be on the shuttle, what it's like to be in space. Give me the answer that you give them when they ask you the question, what's it like, Dr. Magnus? What's it like, Sandra?
Well, I think, first of all, you're absolutely right. Everywhere I go and I talk to people, there's an inordinate amount of interest in what we're doing in space. They're excited that the United States has a space program. They're excited about what we're doing in space. And they're full of questions just like this one. And the one thing that I like to share with people about what it's like to be in space is actually the majesty and the beauty of looking out the window for the first time or the third time or the 700th time and looking at our planet below. It is so beautiful. It looks so fragile. It's just very serene. It's our spaceship, and you can tell how thin the atmosphere is, and you can see that, oh, my gosh, we have to take care of this planet, and it's just a magic thing to be able to see that, and I wish everybody could see that because it really gives you an interesting perspective on our planet.
One final question, Dr. Magnus. Does the fact that the shuttle mission is ending, does it limit opportunities for astronauts like yourself going forward, or do you think that the opportunities will still be there? It just means that you're getting up to the ISS by a different vehicle, a different mode of transportation, if you will.
Well, certainly the opportunities are still there. I mean, we're just shifting the emphasis in our office from a short duration type of mission, which was driven by the shuttle and its capabilities, to the long duration missions that we need to support space station and to go on an exploration. So certainly the opportunities are there. And I think as we develop our space policy and establish concretely what we're going to go do, that'll even broaden the opportunities even more. So I don't really feel like there's a dearth of opportunities in the space program.
Dr. Magnus. Thanks so much. Best of luck to me. I'm really excited for you. I'll be watching like everybody else, but I'll be watching with greater interest just having had this interview with you and having spoken to you. So best of luck to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
That's okay, I like the smile.
Nothing down low. We don't have anything down low.
Nothing coming.
Camera 5. Put your spoons in the way.
So you pick up the phone number, you bring it over, Mike comes over, he comes over here, and then somewhere around here is when you're doing
it. We desire to do it over here. I'll do a foot jam, stand up. And I get two hands on it. Did it before, Larry?
Well, I'm GCA and I'm Bill Clarence, so that's what my point is. That maybe
starting a little bit faster.
The problem with little ones is they're generally, in the places you use those kind of screws are places that have real limited access, and so put it on something like that.
How would you make that?
And then connect anything to that.
This is just like the
The
one in the shuttle thing.
Yeah.
And likewise this guy. The robo grips are pretty cool.
Okay.
About a minute out.
Okay, thank you.
Space Shuttle Endeavour as it's coming in for landing. Gear down and locked.
Space Shuttle Endeavour touched down in Florida last week for the very last time. Only one more launch and one more shuttle mission remains.
And that final mission will happen in about a month from now. The Space Shuttle Atlantis will launch July 8th to deliver supplies and spare equipment to the International Space Station.
And one of the astronauts on board will be Belleville native Sandra Magnus. She will be the last female astronaut to fly on a shuttle mission.
And there she is, NASA astronaut Sandra Magnus, joining us live this morning down in Houston to talk about this historic flight. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you again.
Oh, we're glad you're with us. You know what? First off, let's get those shout-outs going. Who do you want to say hello to in the bi-state?
Well, of course, I have to say hello to my mother and my brother Eric and his wife Karen and my two nephews, Logan and Nolan.
Pleasantries duly noted.
So no one. Good, good. Well, listen, you are the veteran of two shuttle flights, and you spent almost 5 months aboard the International Space Station. Very hard to believe that is coming to a close. Do you feel that way as well as an astronaut and someone who's been so closely associated with it?
Well, you know, it's funny when you're training for a mission like we are, you're very focused on the mission itself. But during this training flow, we've had a lot of, oh, this is the last time we're having this class, or this is the last time we're having this class, and that's sort of kept it in our awareness. But I think it's really going to hit us when we land. This is the last one.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are really sad to see it go. I mean, I love seeing these pictures like what we're watching now from space. This mission, I know you've been up on a couple. What are you going to be doing specifically on this mission yourself? What's your duty?
My prime duties are, number one, a robotics officer will be taking the MPLM, the cargo vehicle, out of the shuttle and attaching it and detaching it to the space station so we can do our cargo transfer. And then I'm also the load master, so I'm sort of in charge of all of the logistics involved in taking the several thousand pounds of stuff out of the cargo vehicle, putting it on the space station and making sure it all gets back the things that we're returning get back and get back to Earth safely. So that's a big job.
Loadmaster, that's the coolest title ever.
I am the Loadmaster.
I've got to ask you, what is the strangest, most amazing, or awe-inspiring moment for you ever on a shuttle mission?
You know, I think I have to harken back to my first flight when I was brand new to space and we opened up the payload bay doors and I looked out the window. And I think I've mentioned this before, I just immediately realized how thin our atmosphere was and how fragile our planet looks from space. And it's like, wow, we have a really thin atmosphere. We need to take care of this planet. It's, you know, it's our spaceship. And just the beauty of the planet as I saw it for the first time from those windows, I still very starkly remember that.
How much are you going to miss this program?
You know, it's funny. We've known the shuttle's going to retire for a long time, and so part of you is ready to say goodbye, and it's time to say goodbye to the shuttle because we're going to go out of low Earth orbit, and the shuttle's very much a low Earth orbit kind of a vehicle, but you still have to look back and look at all the things that the program has accomplished. I mean, the shuttle has grown to its mission over the years. It's done science missions, of course, major role in the construction of the International Space Station, and repairing launching satellites and things like this. So it's done a lot of things. But, you know, looking forward, because it was such a strong vehicle and was able to help us build the International Space Station, you look at what we have as an asset in the International Space Station and the wonderful things that we can do there and how we can build on that and go even further, whether it's a moon or an asteroid or Mars, you realize that the shuttle will always be a little bit a part of us because its role in that push to exploration.
Well, you make us very proud, and we appreciate your time this morning. We'll all feel a little more pride in about a month from now when you blast off.
No doubt about it. Loadmaster Sandra Magnus, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
All right, thanks.
And if you'd like to learn more about NASA or this final shuttle mission, look for the segment under the AM Show tab on our website, and we'll link you to NASA's website as well.
You don't get a cooler title than that.
I know.
Loadmaster. Yes.
I love her, by the way.
Yeah,
she's such a great representation of who we are here, you know?
She's smart. Mm-hmm. Ooh, smart.
All right, local brides-to-be, they may be ready for liftoff.
But these soon-to-be newlyweds aren't diving in for a trip to space, but the icing on the cake could help their honeymoon.
Sandy, it's Peter King at CBS Radio News. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Peter. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Sandy, and it's good to talk to you. I guess let me just turn down the volume here. And I guess the first question would be, well, we're just a few weeks away from your last shuttle mission, the last shuttle mission, and one of the things that go through your mind as you prepare, and especially as you know that this is going to be it for the shuttle.
Well, you know, of course, when you're training for a mission, you're very focused on actually getting all the information you need and understanding what you need to know to execute the mission, and that is almost 100% of what you're focused on. But it's been kind of weird for this training flow because we have had, you know, the last time we're going to have this class, the last time we're going to have that class, or the last time the instructor is teaching this, and in Florida, the last time we're going to have this hardware interface with the folks at KSC. And so it's sort of been a theme, if you will, through the whole training flow. This is the last of this, that, or the other thing. And it can't but help make you aware, even through the focus that we have, that there's something special about this mission. And we're very aware of how it's affecting the people around us as we go through the training. And it makes it a little bit special because we're spending a lot of time with the people who have done all these amazing things with the shuttle over the year.
Is it an emotional time for you as well?
I think emotionally it's going to hit the four of us after we finish the mission because, as I mentioned, we're so focused on learning everything we need to learn that only after we are executing it, hopefully successfully, that we can kind of take a breath and look around and go, oh, my gosh, this was it, you know. But on the other hand, having to say goodbye to some of the people that we've had to say goodbye to as we've gone through these lasts, that's been really difficult because these are a lot of really dedicated people given decades to the shuttle program, and now they're unfortunately having to be let go, and that's been really hard to be a part of.
You know, you've got a shuttle flight under your belt. You've got a space station flight under your belt. Is this going to be it for you, or do you want to stick around, and do you want to do another space station tour of duty? Do you want to try flying the commercial vehicles when they start going? Do you want to wait around for the variation of Orion? I mean, what are your plans at this point?
Oh, gosh, Peter, I wish I could tell you. I've been so focused on this mission, and this mission came as a surprise for me that I was chosen to be a part of it, that I really haven't had a chance to think about anything that's happening more than, you know, 2 months in the future.
That said, though, you must have some thoughts about the way human space flight is headed in this country.
Well, I think it's exciting to see that we have a commitment to get out of low Earth orbit. That's certainly something that NASA should be doing now that we have so many other people and companies and entities that are interested in going into low Earth orbit. You know, our job as a government agency is to constantly push the boundaries of what's possible. And clearly that boundary has moved out of low Earth orbit. And I think it's exciting to see that.
Tell us a little bit about what you're bringing up to the station on this final mission.
Wow, we have, of course, tons of consumables that we're bringing, food, hygiene supplies, clothing, things like that, of course. But we're taking a lot of really interesting science experiments, lots of spare parts, anything that we think the station might need to get through. I think we're probably going to be pretty good till early or mid-2012 with all of the supplies that we're taking.
What do you think the shuttle's legacy is going to be? Is it going to be the space station? Is it going to be other things?
It's all of the above. I mean, look at what the shuttle's been able to do for the last three decades. It's really a vehicle that's shown how versatile it is. You know, it's not only built the space station, which I think you're right, it's going to be a huge part of the legacy, but also it's done several science missions. It's retrieved, repaired, and launched satellites. There's so many different things that this vehicle can do. And I think one thing we shouldn't overlook is it expanded the opportunities for people to fly in space. You know, they no longer were test pilots the only requirement to be able to fly on the shuttle. You now have engineers, scientists, internationals. And I think part of the legacy of the shuttle will be the fact that it forged all the bonds that led us to the International Space Station project itself.
The space shuttle also launched the first American woman into space, Sally Ride, back in, I think, 1983. You're going to be not the last American woman in space, obviously, but the last American woman to fly the space shuttle. Is that a strange feeling, or is this, you know, just another mission, just another astronaut to you?
Well, it's just another mission, just another astronaut, because depending upon how you look at it, you know, Fergie's going to be the last naval officer to fly on the space shuttle, Rex is going to be the last Air Force officer to fly on the space shuttle, and And Doug will be the last Marine to fly on the space shuttle. So we all have unique things that we bring to missions, and you can certainly choose to focus on any one of those unique things, but it really is just another mission from that viewpoint.
You know, you've lived on the space station, you've flown the space shuttle before. What are the biggest differences for you in terms of personal satisfaction with each of these kinds of flights?
You know, it's funny. It's trying to compare those kind of missions is trying to compare a sprint to a marathon. You know, when you're on a sprint, you know you're putting 1,000% in all the time, full time. You've got a lot to do. You got to get it done. And there's a certain amount of satisfaction of being able to keep up with that kind of a pace and accomplish everything you need to accomplish. When you're living on a space station, it's more like a marathon. And the challenge there and the satisfaction there comes from you're not really sure what's going to happen the next day. There could be new challenges, things you've trained for, things you haven't trained for, and kinks that you can't even anticipate because it's a long-term mission and you never know what's going to happen. And meeting each one of those challenges and overcoming them as a team is part of the satisfaction with that kind of a mission.
And last question for me, the question I hear from so many people is that, hey, we're concerned that we're not going anywhere in space. What would you say to those people?
Well, I would like to remind everyone that we are fully operational on the International Space Station, as we have been for over a decade. We are continuing to launch astronauts from all over the world to the International Space Station. And now we have some opportunities that the construction's ended. We can now focus entirely on the science and technology development for which the space station was built. We've been doing that all along, of course, but now we can focus 100% on the mission of the space station there. And so I think you're going to see some exciting things happening in the next 10 years. We're not ceasing to have a space program. It's our space program is undergoing a transformation, and we're going to be doing great things in the future.
Sandy, thank you very much, and good luck and safe flight to you.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Good morning. Is this Sandra or is it Sandra? I'm sorry. This is Owen in Houston.
Hi, Owen. Actually, you can call me Sandy if you'd like.
Sandy? Okay. And it's Magnus, right?
Magnus, yes.
Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
They had a little misspelling here. I just wanted to make sure. Well, thanks for spending a couple minutes with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. We're rolling, Sandy. So, let me begin by asking you, how does it feel knowing that you'll be the last person on the one of the last on the space shuttle?
Well, I think if you ask that question to any of the four of us, we'll tell you we're very honored to be a part of the last mission. It is very much like any mission, though. We're very focused on trying to get everything into our heads that we need to know to carry out the mission successfully. So I think the fact that it's the last one, while it's in our awareness, is really going to hit us when we're on that runway after we'll stop.
Sure. I can only imagine the feelings you're going to have. What, any significance to being the last woman to fly on one of the shuttles?
No, actually, I don't think so, because it's not like we're stopping our space exploration program. We have a very vibrant, healthy International Space Station, and we're going to move out on exploration, so there's going to be tons of opportunities for people from all walks of life, not just females, but internationals and civilians, military, and any of the above. So, it's just another mission from that viewpoint.
So still a bright future ahead, but staying on that topic, any advice, let's say woman to woman, to any of the young girls out there studying science who may want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, certainly I would hope that if you have whatever your goal, whether it's to be an astronaut or a journalist or a teacher or a doctor or whatever, I would encourage all young people to go for it. You never know what you can accomplish until you try, and study hard and find your passion and just go for it.
Sandy, one of the questions we've asked a lot of the astronauts as the shuttle program's been coming to an end, what are your plans for the future? I know you've talked about a vibrant future for space exploration, but with what's happening to the shuttle program, any idea on where you're headed next?
Well, certainly in the astronaut office, we're shifting our focus from the short-duration missions that are driven by the way the shuttle operates to the long-duration missions that require you to be on, you know, in training for several years and on orbit for 6 months or more. And this is a transition that's been going on for the last 10 years inside the office. And we'll be continuing to have these long-duration opportunities, as well as we'll have people that will be getting involved in the development of the next generation of vehicles. So I think we'll be busy for some time to come.
And any place you want to visit in particular, any place in outer space you'd like to go?
Personally? Gosh, you know, when I was younger, I thought it might be kind of fun to go to Mars, but I'm not sure I'm in the right generation for that. But some of the young people we've been discussing earlier, I'm sure they're going to have an opportunity to do that, is go to Mars or another planet. I think that would be very exciting.
Safe to say the galaxy's the limit? I guess we don't know, do we?
No, we don't know. The universe is the limit, I guess you have to say.
Sandy Magnus, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Don't you want people to know this is just a very small portion of that tape?
Morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
This is Bob Pretty at the Missouri Net in Jefferson City, Missouri.
How are you, Bob?
I am just wonderful. Let's just get things going here. We'll start out by asking the question I'm sure a lot of people are asking. This flight has to be kind of a bittersweet flight for you and a lot of other folks in the shuttle program, I guess.
Yeah, it's been an interesting training flow because of that. You know, we've had a lot of, this is the last time we're going to have this class, or this is the last time that we're going to interact with these people in Florida. This is the last time this instructor is teaching this class. And it's really been kind of sad because some of these people, of course, are leaving their jobs after they're finished training us. And yet it's hard to look back on the shuttle program and not be kind of happy and excited about what it's accomplished over the last three decades as well.
This program started while you were still in high school, I guess, and now you're kind of seeing the end of it. But where do you go after this flight? Have you given thought to your own future with NASA?
No, actually, I've been so focused on the mission, I haven't really been able to think about anything more than a couple months ahead. But, you know, there's plenty of opportunities in the astronaut office to fly long-duration missions, and there'll be opportunities for people to help build the next generation of vehicles. So there's still a lot going on here.
Tell me about Raffaello.
Raffaello will be stuffed to the gills with all kinds of things that we're taking to the space station. It's actually the heaviest MPLM we've ever flown. We've got enough consumables to get through the next year and a half, lots of science experiments, lots of spare parts, and we're going to be very, very busy on board emptying it out and filling it back up.
Is this going to be a permanent part of the space station, or is this something that can be detached and moved back and forth?
Yeah, this one will be actually detached and brought back to Earth. We did leave Raffaello's cousin, if you will, on board on 133, and that's sort of become a permanent closet there on the space station.
You're one of only four people on the crew this time. That's a much smaller crew than we've had for the last many missions. Why only four this time?
Yeah, and the size of the crew is actually driven by the rescue scenario that we have to institute. If you recall, after Columbia, we came up with a policy that we would always have another shuttle ready to go in case the previous shuttle, as it launched, found damage on it and wouldn't be able to return, so we have another shuttle able to go up and rescue the crew. Since we're the last shuttle, we don't have another shuttle available to rescue us, and that means our rescue scenario involves returning on the Russian Soyuz vehicle. So the way that scenario works is there'll be one of us coming down with each Soyuz vehicle that returns over the next year, and so with four people, it does take a year to get us back, and so you want to minimize the exposure that you have to that risk. And so four people was determined the maximum you need to fly the minimum you need to fly the shuttle and the maximum you'd want to have in case you had to invoke the rescue scenario.
Well, we hate to think about the rescue scenario, but the fact is you did spend 4.5 months on a previous mission in space. Would spending a year in space on something like this be at all daunting to you?
No, not at all. You know, the space station is you know, practically my home as well, and I've certainly can draw on my space station training and help Doug and Fergie and Rex get acclimatized to it, and I think it would be it'd actually be quite a treat.
Tell me more about your role. Will you be doing any work outside the space station during this experience?
Actually, I'll be doing the robotics work with Doug Hurley to support the space station. Because we are a crew of four, you know, typically the shuttle crew will bring their spacewalkers with them, but because we're a small crew, we're actually having the two station crew members, Mike Fossum and Ron Guerin, who were already on station at the time when we arrived, they'll be doing the spacewalk that'll be going on while we're there. Rex will be doing sort of the choreography part of the spacewalk, and Doug and I will be doing the robotic support.
I have to ask you where we go after the shuttle as far as the United States space program is concerned. What's out there next for us?
Well, certainly we've been flying the International Space Station now for over a decade. We will continue to send astronauts not only from the United States but from all of the International Space Station countries to the space station. We've got a great, thriving science program and technology development program there. And as far as NASA goes, our next human spaceflight endeavor with respect to vehicles that we're building will be targeted to go out of low Earth orbit. That's the next shift you'll see in the human spaceflight policies. We'll be working the space station for the next 10 years and shifting our focus to get out of low Earth orbit and explore the surrounding parts of the solar system.
Will you be taking anything special up with you because this is the last flight?
We have a few things, but you're going to have to wait like everybody else. We're getting that question a lot. We have some plans on how we're going to celebrate the fact this is the last flight.
Well, I remember, I'm trying to remember whether it's one of the Gemini flights or one of the Apollo flights. The last Apollo flight, I saw a picture of some of the astronauts with a sign on their back saying, "The end." Are we going to see signs taped on the back of this crew saying, "The end," or anything?
Well, I'm not going to give away any of our plans. You'll have to watch.
Okay. The shuttles come back and they become museum pieces. Should they be, in your mind, is there still life in these shuttles? Would they still be usable? Do they need to go to museums right now?
Well, you know, of course, that was the great controversy that we were dealing with after the Columbia accident when we were reevaluating what to do with the human spaceflight program and the shuttles in particular. And at that point, it was determined that, okay, you know, these vehicles have been flying for way beyond what we thought would be their useful life. And airframes wear out and you know, these kinds of vehicles wear out. And so in 2010, we have to make a decision on whether we want to recertify these vehicles, which would involve a huge amount of resources to look at them, if you will, with a fine-tooth comb and make sure they're safe to continue to fly, or take that money and those resources and invest in a program that moves us forward in our plans for space exploration, i.e. out of low Earth orbit. So that decision was actually made a long time ago that we would use the resources in that manner. Certainly, if you took the time and the expense and the manpower to recertify the vehicles and continue to fly them, we probably could. But in the long term, is that the right idea or not? And as opposed to having the vehicles just sit in a building somewhere now that they're retired, it's certainly great that they're going to be out there in museums and accessible to people so they can really contemplate and be educated more fully on what we're doing in the space program.
When people go to the museums and visit the shuttles and go through them, what do you want them to take from that experience?
You know, the shuttle is a vehicle, I think, that will remain unique well into the future. If you look at what it was designed to do, launch as a rocket, be a science laboratory on orbit, land as a heavy glider, the technology that was used to build the shuttle 30 years ago is still very much on the edge of what we can accomplish in some areas. And I think when people look at the shuttle in a museum, they need to see that as a symbol of the ingenuity and the spirit of adventure and the spirit of just, we're going to get this done, that we have in the country and that moves us forward into these exciting exploration paths that we have in front of us.
Okay, you're going to be coming back after a pretty good size, pretty good long mission here sometime in July with luck, if everything goes according to schedule. Talk to me a little bit about, I think we've talked to other astronauts about the experience of taking off, but talk to me about the experience of coming back from orbit in a shuttle and how it feels to come out of space and get back to gravity.
And you know, that's actually, I think, a really good point, because it's one of the two most interesting things I've experienced in the space program. One, of course, is looking out the window at the Earth, and two is actually understanding what gravity is. You know, it's something that we live in here on Earth all the time. You don't even realize what it's doing to you every day and how much you're fighting it to operate. But when you've been out of the gravity field, you know, in free fall around the planet, even just, you know, my short mission, 11 days, you come back into this field, this force field that is just pulling you to the planet. It's just trying to squish you to the planet like a bug, and just raising your arms or standing up or walking around, you are using a lot of energy to work against it. And to experience that sort of afresh, if you will, gave me a really interesting perspective on life on our planet. It's, gravity's tough.
Well, after your long mission, 4.5 months, was it especially acute then?
Well, you know what I noticed for rehab after my 4.5 month mission was that for about 2 weeks straight, every day around 5 or 6 o'clock, I started to get really tired. I was fatigued because the energy level that I needed to operate in gravity just on a daily basis, just moving around and doing daily tasks, I had to rebuild that baseline energy level. I was strong, of course, because I worked out on orbit and I came back really strong, but the energy level, the fundamental just how to operate in gravity and all the energy you need to operate in gravity. It took me about 2 weeks to recover that, because about 5 or 6 o'clock, I just wanted to lay down and get, you know, as quiet as I could because my body was tired.
Sandy, maybe we can talk after you get back after this trip. It would be fun to talk to you about your thoughts about the final trip of the shuttle, if we could do that maybe. But I appreciate talking to you today.
Very good. It was a lot of fun. Talking about space is always a lot of fun, so that's not a problem.
Well, let's do it again sometime.
Very good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Problem with little ones is they're generally in the places you use those kind of screws are places that have real limited access, and so put it on something like that.
Why would you make that? You
and then to connect anything to that.
Yeah.
This is just like the the one in the shuttle fan bit. And likewise this guy. The robo bits are pretty cool.
Tugging some more.
know to move, not move.
All right, guys. Everybody on that side? Fuck you. This is out of your way.
It all made sense.
Attaching the hatch.
Attaching the
hatch.
That was the hard part. Well, I
must have even showed it.
I showed it. Looking at me like the RCA dog. He's like, huh?
You got it. You got it.
I knew what she was doing.
I figured it out after a while. There's no windows.
We were on the same wavelength.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good morning, this is Houston.
Good morning.
You're about 2:30 away. You will be speaking with Jose.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. Our time now is 8:43 on this Monday morning.
And it's a really beautiful one if you like hot weather, right, Christy?
Oh, my gosh. Records falling left and right yesterday. 105, can you believe it, at Bush Airport? Of course, that's a new record, as well as Hobby, over 100. Galveston hit a new record, College Station. You can see the heat on here across our area, and it wouldn't surprise me to see more triple-digit heat in our area again for day, so be on the lookout for that. Again, just want to show you here our storm reports, because we did have a few with some really strong storms that moved through the area. No tornadoes, although we did have some damage here. Most of these were straight line wind damage, what we call downburst winds, and we do have some down power lines. We have a live picture that is out of Humble. You can see there crews working on trying to get those up. Right now, as of the 8 o'clock hour, Center Point Energy still with about 4,500 residents without power here around southeast Texas. So this is still a situation where we do have people that are without power this morning, and we hope we get that back on soon, because, you know, we've got this heat to deal with too. So, again, we'll be keeping you posted on that as well. So, again, for us, we continue to deal with temperatures heating up here across the area. We're already in the 80s for many locations, including Bush Airport, Galveston at 85, Hobby at 84.
Hey, you're around 90 out with Jose.
In the tropics as well. We've got a broad area of low pressure here sitting just south here of Grand Cayman Island. Again, this is a broad area of low pressure, so keep in mind, as I show you these spaghetti model plots, typically until we get a closed low, these things don't do very well with predicting where this thing may go. So you can see the variability from the Yucatan all the way over towards the Bahamas. So it's just going to be something that we're going to watch. We'll keep our eyes on over the next couple of days, and we'll let you know how it all progresses. For us, we continue to deal with the heat once again, and late-day storms popping up. We've got this feed kind of coming right off the Gulf of Mexico. So our winds, again, and our storm motion today will be like yesterday. They're going to move from the east to the west, kind of around the bottom side of this high, kind of coming around right along the coastline. So keep that in mind, east to west flow, and just keep an eye to the sky, because we could have more severe storms later tonight with the heating of the day. It's just simply one of these scenarios where we just get so hot, we finally break the cap, and then we can get these types of severe storms popping up. So we'll keep you posted on that. High today, 100 hot with afternoon storms and an ozone watch in effect, and we finally get closer to our normal, Michelle, as we head toward Wednesday, right through the weekend, but it stays very dry.
And hot, hot, hot. Thanks for that, Christy. Good morning. Let's get a check on that commute. Check out those main lanes heading inbound on 610 the West Loop at BeachNet. We had an earlier incident near this location, slowed a lot of folks down this morning. It's now incident-free, but it's already left its mark, as you can see. Pretty jammed main lanes there. Let's take another live look outside. 29 the Southwest Freeway at Chimney Rock. We also have
30 out
here. It was blocking the left lane. It looks like it's all cleared out either way, but we are still a bit busy there. Let's zoom in on 610 the South Loop and the West Loop. We had an earlier accident at Bel Air. Take a look at all of that backup. So it's still going to be pretty packed for a little while as we are recovering from that earlier accident. 59 the East Texas Freeway is slow as you cross I-10 and 59. Nothing out of the ordinary there. That's usual congestion for this time of the morning. And on I-45, the North Freeway Airtex, that left shoulder, left lane blocked as you travel northbound toward the Spring area. So expect some slowdowns once you get past.
Standby. the Beltway area. We have no other major problems out there. Buckle up, drive safe, and you can check it out all day long. Just go to myfoxhouston.com, click over to the traffic.
Space Shuttle Endeavour is already on its way to the California Museum now that it has been retired, and NASA is already preparing for the final space shuttle mission. Shuttle Atlantis, scheduled to lift off on July 8th. And astronaut and mission specialist Sandra Magnus is live at the Johnson Space Center. She's joining us. Good morning, and thank you for at least talking to us this morning, because this is a very historic mission, because it's not just the last for Atlantis, but for you personally, you're going to be the last female aboard a space shuttle. What does this say to you, and what does it say to ladies all around the world?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. We've been chuckling about that, Fergie and Doug and Rex and I, because, you know, Doug is the last Marine, and Rex is the last Air Force officer, and Fergie's the last Navy guy. So as being a part of the last mission, we're all very honored. But if, depending upon the way you want to look at it, everybody's the last something. And we're continuing flying astronauts in space on the space station, so the opportunities are going to be there. But I think we do want to point out that the shuttle was a great vehicle in that it expanded the opportunities for all kinds of people from different walks of life to fly, whether females or civilians or scientists or engineers, even international. So it's been a great vehicle for increasing opportunities in spaceflight in general.
Back in 1983, Dr. Sally Ride kind of broke that ceiling and became the first female on board a shuttle. Was she in any way any inspiration as you decided that you wanted to be one of those to travel 220 miles up in space?
Well, you know, it's funny. I remember in 1978 when I was going into high school, and I already had this idea that I wanted to be an astronaut sort of planted in my head. And I remember seeing a newspaper article on the fact that NASA had just selected the first women into the astronaut corps. And that really hit me hard. It's like, wow, look at this. It's going to be a possibility. They're starting to have women fly in the program, and that's just great. So that really, really gave me sort of extra encouragement when I saw in 1978 that they had selected the first group of women astronauts.
Now, you've been with NASA since 1996, and this really is not going to be your first or even your last rodeo for NASA.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate in that I personally have been able to fly a short and a long duration mission. This will be my third mission, and it's been really great to experience both types of missions, because they're very, very different.
So what's it like staying on the International Space Station for 4.5 months?
You know, what's nice about staying on the space station is you live there. You develop a lifestyle there. You're not just visiting and sprinting around and trying to get everything done before you have to leave. You've got time to just take it easy and experience space in a completely different way than you do on a shuttle mission. And it's a really special treat, and it was a lot of fun.
Astronaut Sandra Magnus, also mission specialist, thank you so very much for joining us. Godspeed, and you know all of our prayers in the Houston area are with you.
Thank you very much.
And the Atlantis crew.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again for joining. Well, time now to check out some of the hottest.
Thank you. You're clear.
Clip, and you know who does that?
Great. Sandy, good morning. This is James Dean with the Florida Today paper down at Kennedy Space Center. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Good morning, James.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, and as I'm pulling up the rear, I think, apologies in advance for any repetition that causes, but really appreciate your time. And, of course, we had a chance to see you in person a short time ago to see Atlantis roll out and Endeavour's return, and just wondering, you know, after the fact, with that all completed now, what was that experience like? And I'm wondering if it began to sort of sink in more or make it more real at that time that this really was going to be the last mission.
Yeah, you know, it did, actually. It's been like that for our training all along. We've had these little milestones popping up. You know, this is the last time we're going to have this class. This is the last time this instructor is teaching this class. When we came down for our CEIT, our hardware interface with Atlantis, you know, this is the last time we're doing this. We had our last cargo review a couple weeks ago. So we've been getting these little milestones like this all along during the training. But certainly to see the orbiter roll out of the VAB for the last time and see it there just on the mobile launch platform, because that is such an impressive sight, you know, for on any day. but to realize that, wow, this is it. That's, you know, so it's, as it gets closer and closer, it starts to become more and more obvious to us, and it hit us a little bit harder, more that this is the last one.
And can you describe a little bit your interaction with the folks here at KSC during the CEITs, as you noted, or any other you know, opportunities you've had to work with the folks here? Has that been a very emotional experience, or is it, or are people kind of keeping that inside, you know, as you go through your normal, you know, whatever work you have to get done?
Well, we've been fortunate to be down there quite a bit during this training flow, and I have to tell you, James, CEIT was really tough emotionally, because here we're down there to look at the orbiter for the last time, and the next day, several of the people that we were working with, and of course several hundred around the site, was going to be their last day, and here these people for decades have been working on the shuttle program. They had put their heart, their soul into getting Atlantis ready for years, and now they were being let go, which is an unfortunate consequence of the transition of the program. But it was so inspiring. I remember talking to this gentleman in the parking lot, and it was his last day, and he was talking about how proud he had been and how excited he had been to be able to be a part of the shuttle program for so many years. And I was listening to him, and I'm like, wow, you know, I've always known this, but this just really hit home on what a quality group of people we have in Florida and around the country here working on our space program. So people were sad, but they were also very excited to be a part of the program, determined that Atlantis was going to fly in the best shape that it ever had been in its whole entire history. And it was just hard to see that happening, where you've got all these enthusiastic, dedicated, highly loyal, skilled people, you know, having to say goodbye. It was really tough.
So I take it this flow inevitably, of course, is like no other you've been through before. And have you been doing anything special to, you know, thank those types of folks or sort of mark those milestones as they're coming up?
Well, we certainly have been trying. Like I mentioned, we've been able to get to Florida much more frequently than you do during a normal flow, and that's because we do feel it's important to get down there and thank everybody in person. And the same thing in Houston, you know, we recognize people when we're having these last events. We've got a few things planned for orbit, but you're going to have to wait.
Okay. Looking forward to that. This morning's event, of course, was headlined by the fact that you're the last woman to fly on the shuttle. I take it that that's not a milestone that you attach a great deal of personal significance to?
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're all the last, all four of us are the last of something here. You know, Fergie's the last Air Force, Navy officer, Rex is the last Air Force officer, Doug's the last Marine. So, you know, and we're continuing to fly astronauts in space on the space station and, of course, what comes after. So I think focusing on the fact that I'm the last female, or Fergie's the last naval guy, and Marine and Air Force, is missing the point of the fact that this is really the last shuttle, and let's examine what the shuttle's given the country and how we're building on that legacy to move forward, and how really the shuttle increased when it first started operation, increased the opportunities for all kinds of different walks of life to start flying in space. So it's more important to focus on that, I think.
Yeah. Do you think, though, that since really the world will be watching this mission closer than many others, obviously, since it'll be the last, that there is some kind of important symbolism there, that it might be a missed opportunity if people, people, you know, don't generally keep track of how many naval officers or whatever other types of folks are flying on a given crew, but to see a woman there, especially for young people, might be kind of an important reminder of that particular legacy.
Well, you know, that's a tough question, because, you know, as a female astronaut, of course I want to serve as a role model for not just young women, but young people in general, that, hey, you know, no matter what your dreams are or what your aspirations are, you should go for it, because you never know what can happen, and you owe it to yourself to try. I mean, you constantly want to be getting that message out, and certainly I'm sure young women identify with me a little bit more closely than young men, for example. So certainly you hope that message, just by being here, we can get it across. But also, it's important to understand that whether you're a female or a male or an engineer or a scientist or from any specific ethnicity, the important thing is to do your best. And once you do your best and you're recognized on the merits, it doesn't matter from where you come from, because it's really all about just doing your best and being competent. So, you know, there's two sides to that coin.
Sure. Are you concerned at all about opportunities becoming more limited in the post-shuttle era? I'm not sure, you know, quite how many seats these new vehicles will fill each flight, but obviously there's only so many spots on the station to do a long-duration flight, and it may be exploration missions may be, you know, one a year or so, something like that. So is it going to get harder now after the shuttle?
Well, harder's probably a different way to look at it. I think perhaps the number of slots might decrease because, of course, the shuttles can take six or seven people at a time, and there's no other vehicle that's ever been able to do that. So perhaps while the quantity of slots might decrease, the quality of the opportunity and the types of opportunities are going to change and perhaps increase, if you will, because there's certainly a difference between flying on a 12-day mission on the shuttle versus living on the station for 4.5 months. And those are two completely different opportunities with different risks and rewards and challenges. And so, you know, it really comes down to how do you want to talk about the opportunities. They're certainly going to be changing. Perhaps the quantity is going to be going down, but perhaps the richness of the opportunity is going to be increasing. You see what I mean? It's not really an apples and oranges comparison, I think.
Talk a little bit about your experience with long duration life on this station. You've described, you know, that it's obviously gave you the chance to establish sort of a lifestyle and experience what that means as compared to the sprint of a shuttle mission. What were some of the ways you had to adjust to a long stay in space, and is there any one or two lessons you kind of took away that might apply to a future exploration type mission?
Well, certainly I think one thing that we've had to learn as an organization is about the pace of the mission. When you're flying a shuttle mission, as you're well aware, it's just, you know, 1,000% pace. You're just sprinting along. You have so much to do. You have so much, you know, so much to pack into a small amount of time that you really need to plan for the mission differently. You need to mentally prepare yourself for the mission differently. And that's not a pace that you can do for a long duration mission. You have to slow down. You have to understand that things are going to move a little bit more methodically. You have to understand that we're here in the long run, and how you react to situations is different. And so it's not even just how you fly a mission like that, but it's how you run a mission like that, how you plan for a mission like that. And there's a lot of valuable experience that we've learned on the space station about preparing for these long-duration missions. You know, the ability of the crew during a long-duration mission to balance your schedule a little bit. As you know, a shuttle mission is very highly timelined, very highly controlled by the ground. Because it is so short, you have to be very efficient and get a lot of tasks in a short period of time from the viewpoint of, you know, just the density of the tasks. On space station, if the crew has more of a capability to modify their day, they can actually operate more efficiently. And so, you know, the tasking between the ground and the crew changes a little bit in how you plan. And so these are lessons that we're learning as we continue with the space station that are going to be very valuable as their crews are pushed further and further away from the planet on these missions. And so those are all interesting observations that I noticed as I was comparing the short to the long.
Sandy, thank you. I think my time may be up. If I do have a chance for one more question, I was going to ask about the role of STS-135 in setting up the station for a period of some uncertainty for vehicles getting up supplies and equipment after the shuttle, and what you think it might be like for a station crew member to know that the shuttle is no longer there to provide that service in the years ahead.
Yeah, well, you're certainly correct in that the focus of this mission is to, you know, send that last monstrous logistics slug to station so that we're prepared for whatever flexible schedules that we may have as we get the private companies online. And as far as being on board and noticing whether the shuttle's there or not, you know, the shuttle has unique capability to bring lots of stuff at one time. But as you're aware, we have constantly Progress cargo vehicles, ATV cargo vehicles from Europe, HTV cargo vehicles from Japan arriving. And so, believe it or not, the station's actually a very busy place. They're between the Soyuzes, the Progresses, the HTVs, the ATVs, and the shuttle, there are vehicles coming and going and coming and going all the time. So I think as a space station crew member, you might not explicitly notice that the shuttle's not coming from the viewpoint of there's so much traffic already, although I think we'll be missing the ability of the shuttle to bring back very large objects like we are on this mission, the pump module, and that'll probably be where it's noticed.
Well, thank you again very much for your time. Looking forward to the flight, and we'll see you soon, I guess, at TCDT.
Very good. Nice talking with you, James.
Thank you very much, Danny. Bye-bye.